Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to the Pakistan Cricket Podcast. Episode 19, Jared Kimber on leg spin, Mushtaq Ahmed and Shane Warne.
All right, looks like it is recording. So it's my pleasure to welcome one of my favorite cricket writers, Jared Kimber, to the podcast. Someone who has done all sorts of other things as well, not just cricket writing, like documentary filmmaking, which you know I loved when it came out on Netflix a few years back. And is now beginning a podcast empire from what I can see. I don't know if that's what it is. 99.94. People should check it out. So how are you doing, Jared?
I'm very good. Thanks for the intro.
So I told you, you know, I primarily wanted to speak to you about leg spin and your love for Mushtaq Ahmed in particular. But before we do that, I think I'd be remiss not to ask you about what you made of Pakistan at the World Cup in Australia.
So I do, one of my podcasts is just Q&As from fans, and there's one particular fan who was very, very adamant. He was Indian, actually, but very, very adamant that everything Pakistan was doing was wrong with their tactics going in. You know, the slow opening batting, essentially rough middle order that never gets a bat, so we don't even know how good they are, and then loading it all in new bowlers. And beforehand, I was saying, look, it's not how I would plan a team for a couple of different reasons. One is it only gives you one bite of the cherry. You can never bat a team out of a game, right? So you're reliant on your bowlers being so good so often that works. I said, but if you look at their bowlers and you look at the depth of their bowlers and what they have the ability to do, it's a game plan that they have decided is the best for them to maximize their talents. And it's very consistent. It also works very well in World Cups because having better bowling attacks generally works well, better in tournaments than having better batting lineups. Consistently, if you look through the history of even all the T20 leagues, but all the way back through the history of World Cups, we could see that is something that has held up a lot. And so I think from that perspective, they did very well. But of course, what they needed to be able to do in that final is, you know, bat on a different level, unlock themselves a little bit and do everything else. And that's where they didn't have that ability. They still made it a game, which shows you how strong they are on one side of the ball. I think when you're playing against England, who is getting the most out of their bowling and has such a variety of bowlers available to them and is very good with their tactics, they're obviously not the same kind of bowling attack, not in the same league as Pakistan. But it's very hard to play England if you're only playing on one side of the ball consistently. Doesn't mean that they couldn't have rolled them in that final and they weren't that far away and all that sort of thing. But I think that's the big difference is you're basically going into those tournaments saying, well, our bowling's this good, we're just going to do it. And so much so that we're just going to almost give up our batting.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is that the batting isn't that good. It's not, I don't know who the players are. Mohammad Wasim, everyone loves him. And then you do 5 minutes of research and you're like, maybe he can only play right-arm seam bowling. So I'm not sure he's quite the savior everyone thinks.
Oh,
Marcus Zaman is not as fast a scorer as everyone seems to think he is. you know, you watch them bat against the Netherlands and Zimbabwe, and you're like, maybe it's just a limited batting lineup that is very good at rocking those 140 to 170 scores. And because of the bowling, they're going to win more often than not. And their winning record over the last, 5 years now is exceptional, right?
Absolutely.
But they're quite clearly can't, I don't think they can compare to what England has done. So I think England at the moment in T20 cricket, and they have been for a long time in one day cricket, have just been a different level to everyone else.
Absolutely the best team in for years now.
And I think if you're not trying to optimize every part of your game, I'm not sure if you could compete with England, because if they're going to turn up with the tournament and make Sam Curran into a death bowler and it's going to work, and you've got Shah Masood in the middle order as your third anchor in case your other two anchors fail, you know, you're not maximizing what you can do with your team. And I think that's what I saw of Pakistan.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. You know, the idea of with the bowling lineup that you go for a low ceiling, high floor, and make sure you get decent scores and then the bowling take over. The interesting thing is, like, the thing that you guaranteed with a conservative batting lineup was the top two and three being consistent. And that's ironically what we didn't get because of the conditions, maybe.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some ways they came into the tournament with the ideal setup, right? With
yeah.
A bunch of fast bowlers, a wrist spinner that they couldn't drop because he was going to bat in the top six. And two guys who are good when the ball's nipping around and, you know, are good against the brand new ball and everything. It didn't work. But if you look at it, it's really only about a 3-game sample size they failed.
Absolutely.
By the end of the tournament, they're back again anyway. So it just happened to be that those three games, you know, coincided with, you know, two monumental losses, I suppose, you know, of games that they should have won. So I've got no problem saying over the last two tournaments, Pakistan's the second best team in T20 at the moment. But that after those two tournaments, considering England had, 10 players out over those two tournaments, it would be hard to say that Pakistan's on the heels of England. And I would have said that if Pakistan had managed to get over the line there, I'm not sure I would have thought that Pakistan was a better team than England.
I agree.
I didn't think Australia was in the best two teams last tournament, right?
Exactly.
So I think from that perspective, what you have is it's a very, very good team, but how they get it from there to the level that is going to bother England, they're not the only team that's thinking that. The strength that they have is, like, you know, I'm doing a big project on the moment on India. So where does India... What does India do other than maybe try and bat down to 9 or 10? Mm-hmm. Right? They can't. They don't have the bowlers who strike. They don't have that sort of Pakistani strength, right? They don't have the anchors who score really quickly in the way that, you know, David Warner does for Australia and that sort of thing. So you look at India and you're just like, there's a lot to be done. You look at Pakistan, you're like, well, 2 years from now, it's going to be more Asian-like conditions.
Exactly.
You know, you get a couple of players, maybe you change it. By then, in my perfect world, Shadab's batting four by then, right?
Same.
And averaging hopefully 25, 30 doing that, striking at 135. If they've got that flexibility should give them almost anything. And there's still talent there, but it's interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much else to discuss, but I completely agree with you on all of that, especially with Shadab. And we'll get to Shadab at towards the end with one question, if that's okay as well. You know, you've been, as I said, one of my favorite cricket writers, and I want to talk to you about a gazillion subjects, but just for a matter of, you know, keeping it short, I thought I'd ask you about why you love Mushtaq Ahmed so much. You know, I think I came across this in a TalkSport podcast you had with Jonathan Norman many years ago, and I've been trying to find it. I couldn't find it. But I did confirm that I didn't imagine that. You did grow up, I think, in the early 90s, looking up to Mushtaq Ahmed. For very particular reasons, I think, not only because you loved him, but because of Warren as well, which, you know, I'll let you talk about it. So could you talk about why Mushy and what about his action or what he did that made you want to copy him or model your action on him?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to my dad. So my dad was my cricket coach when I played under 12s. And there was probably three of us who were quite good at batting and wicketkeeping. So we all batted and wicketkept, and we changed around. And eventually, my dad sort of said, look, guys, you're the three best players. You're also going to have to bowl as well. and I think at that stage, we were quite, I don't think we developed yet. We didn't realize we were the three best players because we were playing under 12s and we were like eight, right? So we were getting blasted and we didn't know that we were the best players. But my dad, obviously, you know, someone who played a lot of cricket in his life, he could see who was coming and who wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look, you're, you know, just because you understand cricket better than everyone else, you guys are going to bowl. So one of the guys was, he had like almost like a Malinga action in some ways, very slingy, maybe more like Fidel Edwards.
Mm.
My old man was like, look, no one's ever going to be able to play. You just come in and do that. And he said to the other two of us, you're going to have to be a spinners. And my memory, and I'd have to talk to my friend, he may not even remember it either. My dad couldn't remember it when I asked him. But my memory was my dad sort of said, you'll be the off spinner and you'll be the leg spinner. To the but maybe that wasn't what happened. Maybe it was just natural because I would keep to him and he would keep to me. So we were trying to do something slightly different.
Gotcha.
This is 1989, 1990. And spin isn't a thing in Australia. You've got Peter Taylor. I don't know how old you are to remember Peter Taylor.
I'm old enough to remember, but I do not remember.
It's worth going back. If the people who have Peter Taylor had one of the campus bowling actions in world cricket. And he was like a proper, he was a spoiling off spinner before we even had that term, right? Like his whole thing was, you're not going to score off me in the middle overs of a one day game at a time where we weren't even thinking about stuff like that. Like it was a lot of Bob Simpson thinking about one day cricket in a way that we hadn't thought about it before Deepak Patel played for New Zealand or anything like that. You know, so you still had proper spinners flighting it up and everything else. And Peter Taylor was more in that sort of Roger Harper, Viv Richards, but slightly talented, more talented than them. And that was it, right? And then you had Trevor Holmes and Peter Sleep again. Worth looking up his bowling action. It looked like he didn't understand. It looked like no one had ever taught him how to bowl. His arms going everywhere. And it was ridiculous. And these guys all were averaging like 35, 40, 45. Ray Bright, all these crap Australian spinners. And so if you're a young Australian cricketer, right? What are you looking at? All right, there's no one on the TV from your nation to look at. And, you know, that was the Merv Hughes, Bruce Reid, Craig McDermott kind of era, okay. Mike Whitney.
Yeah.
Those sorts of guys, Joe Angel, or you know, Carl Rackerman. So big, muscular, fast bowlers, not particularly fast other than maybe McDermott, but big, muscular, aggressive, fast bowlers. And then the spinners throwing the ball. And it would be like Greg Matthews, who's basically a batter who bowled at test level, right? Or Alan Border taking a 10-wicket haul. So there was no one on TV. And for whatever reason, I picked up leg spin quite quickly and I could bowl off spin. So when I was really little, I'd bowl about three balls of off spin to try and keep the pressure on, right? And then I'd bowl leg spin because that was the thing that no one could hit, right?
But I also matchups early.
It wasn't even a matchup. It was more that I knew I couldn't land, you know, we're talking about a 10-year-old. I knew I couldn't land the ball six times in a row bowling leg spin.
Oh, okay.
But I knew that, and this is probably from watching someone like Peter Taylor, I knew I could dart in an off spinner so that they defend me for three balls. Then I'd toss one up and they'd try and slog it and they almost always hit it straight up in the air. So I think I played my first senior game when I was 10 and took like four wickets, right? And it was basically, that was all I did was, please don't hit me, please don't hit me, please don't hit me. Now I'll try the leg spinner. And every time I tried the leg spinner, these adults were just like, well, I'm going to hit this out of the park. And of course, I don't know what I was doing, but I was probably putting a lot of revs on the ball. So when it bounced, and these are on synthetic pitches. So I did this, and I came in like an off spinner because I couldn't bowl like Peter Sleep because that was physically impossible. And I'm trying to think, the only other guy that would have been around was Abdul Qadir, but I don't think he played in Australia when I was developing. Mm-hmm. I think if I'd seen Abdul Qadir, I would have copied his method, right?
He would have been like right at the end of his career.
Yeah, he was still playing, but I don't think he played in... I remember him playing in Australia when I was younger, but not when I knew what any of that meant. I didn't even know what a leg spinner was when he was playing. And he was the only other one, and I'm trying to think. There was obviously the odd Indian bowler, you know, a Laxman bowled at that time, and there was a couple of others, but there wasn't... Between 87 and 1990, Peter Sleep was the only real leg spinner that I remember seeing repeatedly on the TV. And that action didn't make any sense. Like, I couldn't even understand what he was doing. Like, if he'd asked me to explain leg spin to someone at that stage, I would have said, it looks like you get electrocuted and then you come through. and so I didn't know what I was doing for a little while, but the ball was coming out of my hands quite well. And then, so by the time I'm 11, I'm probably not bowling off spin at all anymore. It's just all leg spin. And that's when Mushy plays. So you'd have to have a look at the dates, but I think it was 1990, 1991, Pakistan 2 at Australia. And I'd have to almost look it up live on the podcast to tell you. But my memory is that Mushtaq Ahmed was around at that time.
I think you're right. I think he came in the early 90s and he had an amazing tour of Australia in 95, but that was
he'd already tour where he was bigger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he definitely plays in Australia in 1990-91. And for me, I suppose that if you look at Greg Matthews, Peter Taylor, who's the other one? Or Peter Sleep, they did have these sort of really extravagant actions, right? And for me, and I've never quite done it, but I've always wanted to do something on extravagant spin actions, and I've got the notes, I've just never had a chance to put it together. But
oh, that'd be great.
He had this incredible action. All these guys had these incredible actions, but they weren't bowling the way that I thought I could bowl. And when I saw Mushy, and remember, I'm 11, so I was quite a tall 11-year-old, but I'm still short compared to everyone else. And quite often I played upper grade as well and played senior cricket and all that sort of stuff. So I'm playing against men, you know, foot and a half to all of them at times. When I'm playing at like that, Mushy's a little guy coming in and he's bouncing in. And I just needed one action to copy. And I probably picked it up in 1990, 1991. Actually, it'd be 1990, wouldn't it? So he would have played. Sorry, now I am going to have to look it up. He would have played in. Yeah, it was 89-90, sorry. And so it would have been early. It would have been that Christmas holidays of 1990 or into January of 1990. I'm watching him on the TV. And from that point forward, I was like, okay, that's an action I think I can copy. Little did I know, I set myself down on a fairly bad path biomechanically trying to copy Mushy's action. But essentially, I did that. That year, I wouldn't say he exploded or anything, but the following year was the World Cup.
That's right? When,
so what's that? 1990, then 91, 92. So yeah, so about almost two full years later, he's back again. So in that short space of time, I've had two options of him. And I think for whatever reason, I felt like I saw a lot of the Pakistan games, probably because they made the finals, probably there were more highlights on, whatever it may be. And so I really perfected probably by 1992. But by 1990, you know, this is before, well, my family didn't have VCR cameras. But by 1990, I was certainly doing that. Now, as all this happens, 1992 is quite an important year, of course, because that's when Shane Warne breaks out.
That's right.
But the other interesting thing is, and you'll know, because it's not something that's really talked about a lot outside of Asian culture, but I think certainly even in Australia and New Zealand and South Africa, my generation didn't really hook on to Test cricket first. We hooked on to one-day cricket first, in a way that doesn't seem to have happened in England until maybe the last 15
years.
Right. But if you look at New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and obviously all of Asia, like we were just watching one-dayers, right?
They exactly.
Colors, and it was more fun. And, you know, you're watching the Kerry Packer series and you're watching Sri Lanka 1 week and then you're watching England. You know, the next year you've got two other teams. Australia A are playing. Like, it's an exciting time to watch.
And you've got those quirky quadrangular series and triangulars that you don't get anymore.
Stuff. Yeah, and all that sort of stuff was happening. So I think for me, Warne hadn't started playing by then. And I'd now had, he'd started playing Test cricket, but he hadn't started playing one-day cricket. And Warne hadn't had the breakout. So if you look at Warne's breakout, his first big test series is, is the Sri Lanka test, which I can't remember if it was televised in Australia or not, but it wasn't. My parents couldn't afford cable TV, so we didn't have it, right? The next one that we see is the Boxing Day 1992, off the top of my head, which is when he takes a 7-for against Richie Richardson at the MCG. Right?
Okay.
So bowls the flipper for the first time.
Oh, yeah, the classic, right? Yeah.
By that stage, I've already had two Mushies seasons. Right? So I'm already bowling like Mushy, and I'm playing representative cricket, and I'm taking lots of wickets. Also, the other thing that was quite interesting is when I was young, Mushy runs through the crease, and I was all skin and bones. Like, I weighed absolutely nothing, right? And so I had no physical strength at all. If I tried to come in like Warne, the ball was just so slow, right? I couldn't do it. And you know, it took me years to get physically strong enough to be able to bowl like Warne in any sort of way. And whereas with Mushy, I was getting through the crease. And when you play on synthetic wickets, if you bowl slow, the ball bounces and sits up.
It's like a tennis ball bounce.
Yeah. So it's concrete with a synthetic wicket on it, right? So it really does sit up. And so if you're slow and really slow, unless they're coming forward to you, right? And that it's really dangerous. That's when it's like playing a tennis ball. But we've all played tennis ball cricket. If you sit back, you can eventually just flat bat it, right? And so any batter, any who's smart, if I wasn't running through the crease, would just sit back and hit me. Or if I was flighting it up and it was too slow, they'd come down the wicket, right? So you couldn't sweep me, but you could basically pull, cut me, or come down the wicket and slog me. And so when you play like mushy, you're getting that extra energy through, and the ball was skidding through a little bit more, which meant the straight ones were more important. This is before Warne even had a straight one, right? And so from that perspective, by the time Warne comes along and he's big, right? So 1992 is the Ritchie game. 1993 is the Ashes. So it's 93-94 when he, you know, changed, you know, is it South Africa or New Zealand? He destroys everyone, right? So by that point, he's completely taken over.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too late. I've already grooved my action, right, into mushy. And on top of that, I loved Warne, but I don't know what it was, but even from a very young age, I worked out that Warne was a very physical cricketer.
That's what I was going to ask you about. His action, you described, I think, in one of the podcasts or one of the discussions, that he was kind of like an Aussie footballer, and so like it was very hard to copy his action because he was a unique physical specimen, right?
Yeah, and I didn't know that at the time, right? I couldn't put that together. A very, very sad thing happened, actually, years ago. I wanted to put my test to Terry Jenner because it's Terry Jenner who perfected Warne's action.
Yeah.
And I got his number, and when I was about to call him, a couple of days before I was starting that project, he died. And I never got to put it to him. And I have talked to Kerry O'Keefe. Me and Kerry O'Keefe have had some conversations about it. We agree and disagree on certain things. But I think the very basic thing was that even as a kid, I worked out that I couldn't do what Warne did. I just couldn't get the revolution through. And I've got a cousin who's about 2 inches taller than me, way thicker in the shoulders than me, probably stronger than me, you know, power forward if you play in the NBA, like, you know, dream on green type body, right?
Yeah.
And he could do it. And he would just come in and he'd bowl the same pace as me off two steps, but I would have to run through the crease. And Mushy did that. And there was only one other bowler who did that. And it was a guy called Craig Howard, who no one knows. I'm like the only person in the world that talks about Craig Howard.
Never heard of him.
Warne had said that Craig Howard was more talented than him as a leg spinner. And they came up together. And Craig Howard was a bit more like me. He was skin and bones. And he wasn't probably a next level athlete in the way that Warne does. It's not that Craig Howe was a very good athlete. The only person to ever go through the academy in Australian cricket as a leg spinner and an off spinner, shows how talented he was. But amazing. But he wasn't like Warne. He didn't have that, you know, special skill set. And basically, Mushy and Craig Howard both ran through the crease, and Craig Howard did it a little bit more like Bill O'Reilly or like a medium pace bowler. And I tried it and it just didn't work. Whereas Mushy's bounciness, right, which he probably took from Abdul, right?
He did, yeah. He said that, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that bounciness just felt the way that I went through. And realistically, for years, until I flirted a little bit with Michael Bevan's action, years later, Mushy's action was pretty much what I did. And I could feel, it just made me feel like I got through the crease. And for me, if I could get through the crease, everything else worked. Right, it was that momentum through the crease that I needed to create to put a little bit more energy on the ball, and I felt like if that was the case, I could control every ball and put it where I wanted it to go at a pace where people could grind down. And I wasn't, because so the reason that my dad, one of the reasons my dad picked me and my mate to bowl spin was because we were so slow through the air, medium pace, right? Mm-hmm. Like so I just don't have that power. I've got a huge throwing arm and no pace on my ball.
Right? Okay,
that's always been the case. I just cannot bowl fast at all. And so for me, the only way to generate that was through that momentum through the crease. And that's what Mushy did. And so Warne is exploding at this point, right? Like by 94, 95, he's everywhere, right? He's a proper top tier Australian celebrity at this point. I'm not talking about cricket celebrity. I mean, everyone in the country knows who Shane Warne is by about 1995.
Yeah.
And this keeps going. And now I'm in Melbourne. Right. So it's not just that I'm in Australia. I'm literally in Shane Warne's hometown and I'm becoming really good in cricket. I'm taking all these wickets and, you know, I mean, looking back, I was probably never talented enough in one particular thing. But, you know, if I played senior cricket, they put me in at slip. Mm-hmm. Very early on, I was opening the batting first drop in senior cricket when I was still playing juniors. You know, the under 16s needed a player from the under 14s for their finals. I'd be the kid I was that level of cricket, starting to play, you know, representative cricket outside of our team, our league as well. And when I started in 1992, or when I started in 1990, I don't remember seeing another leg spinner in club cricket. By 1993, there was like maybe five or six of us in my league of whatever 12 teams. When I played representative cricket in 1995, 96, so we're only talking 2-3 years after his peak, I played in a representative side where we had 16 men in the squad. And my memory is, and I think this is right, that we had four or five leg spinners in that squad.
Wow.
And it wasn't just us, because I remember playing a team. So I played for North Melbourne and we played against Richmond. And when I played against Richmond, they had, I went out to bat and they had a leg spinner on at both ends. And it was just like that kind of everywhere, right? And I remember, you know, if you play club cricket, everyone used to become a finger spinner, right? That used to be the thing in club cricket. Like the old quick bowlers, when they just bowled these darts, right? And suddenly, like by the mid-90s, all these old guys were bowling leg spin. And it was just everywhere. And I've talked to other people in Australia. Other people in Australia say it wasn't quite as sharp outside of Melbourne. Certainly had a bigger effect in Melbourne. But leg spin wasn't a thing. And suddenly, you know, and you look at it, Shane Warne didn't invent anything really other than perhaps the slider. And to be fair, Afridi had that ball and Kumble had that ball. They didn't name it, but they certainly had similar balls. And probably Mushy and Abdul Qadir probably had similar balls to that as well. In fact, almost everything outside of the flipper, Abdul Qadir probably pioneered, right? Mm-hmm. But Shane Warne changed the language. So the flipper was now like a word. And I don't know how much you know about advanced leg spin, but there's probably only 10 people in the world who can bowl test match quality flippers.
Oh, wow.
And leg spin at the same time, right? I'm not saying there aren't blokes in pubs who can't bowl a flipper, right? Right? But the ability to be able to bowl test match quality leg spin and land a flipper consistently, right? If you go through the entire, history of cricket, it's almost no one, right? There are more people who perfected a Dusra than there ever was who perfected a flipper in a 10-year period. The Dusra completely went past the flipper. And so we're talking about this ball that basically doesn't exist, right?
Wow.
And then from there, everything else. So everything is about this. And, you know, if you want to know more about my history, I wrote a book called The Lily of Camberfield, which is about my relationship with my father and cricket and our lives together.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. And so it's on Amazon. It's just, you know, like a novella type book. But in that, like, there's quite clearly that I was rebelling against mainstream society, I suppose. But also, cricket was going towards the thing that I had found before the rest of them. So It's this really weird mix of, like, I don't know. The only other time in my life I can remember it annoying me was, I remember very early on hearing the White Stripes. This is the best rock band I've ever heard.
I was going to say, it sounds like when you find a band that nobody else has heard of and suddenly they go mainstream and everybody's got it. And now you're annoyed. They're like, wait a minute, I knew them before.
It happened twice with me. I remember the White Stripes really early on. Maybe I missed their first album, but I picked up on their second album. Third album was an indie hit. And then after that, Seven Nation Army and everything, right?
Exactly. Everyone That's when I heard them.
Kings of Leon. The first time I saw the Kings of Leon, there was, I reckon, 150 people in a shed watching them, right? And you're just like, oh, this is incredible. And then a couple of years later, it's just like, Kings of Leon's on every radio list. And you're just like, oh, it's not the same. And that's how I felt with the leg spin. And it's a stupid thing to think, right? But I felt like I knew this thing better than everyone else. But suddenly everyone's an expert on this thing?
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, that's how you, yeah.
And realistically, the expert, this is the bit that probably fucked me up as a bowler as much as anything, was the expert nature I was getting from these people was, oh, you don't need to run in like Mushy. You need to come in like Warne. And there were kids who could do it, right? Hilariously, if you go through Melbourne club cricket, and I reckon the rest of Australian club cricket would be really similar, there were all these kids who at 15 and 16 were playing top level grade cricket, right, as leg spinners. And by 18, 19, 20, most of them weren't playing anymore. Or they were batters, right? And there's even famous ones. Like Cameron White's maybe the most famous one. Like literally, you know, Cameron White comes through, he's going to be the next Shane Warne. And by the time he's 19, you're like, I don't think he can do it. And what happened again and again was growth spurts. And what these kids were doing was they were strong enough to get the ball through and put the revs on it and everything else. But they were doing it in a way that when they were about 5 foot tall, the ball was going up and down. Once they hit 15, 16, 17, and they have that second growth spurt, they get too high. When the ball goes up, people can just run down and attack it, right? And they okay. didn't have the strength of the revolutions that Warne had to bring the ball down before people could come back. I had my growth spurt at 12, right? So I was almost, I'm 6 foot tall, right? And I was about 5 foot 10 by the time I was 12 or 13.
Oh, wow.
Which meant that I never had that advantage that everyone else. So I couldn't, and this is all biomechanics. No one's even talking about biomechanics.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So I didn't know what it was. All I knew was if I walked in and bowled like Warne, I just got fucking
smacked.
Hammered over and over again, right? Whereas if I came in like mushy, suddenly really good players are defending me and they're, you know, trying to manipulate the field. And the minute I go back to walking in, I spin the ball twice as much, right? But it doesn't matter. Because like they're just sitting on the back foot and cutting me, or they're coming down the wicket and smacking me. And so all these kids who did the Warne method, Australia hasn't produced another cricketer like Shane Warne after that. And no one who watched him could do it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I know this intrinsically for me. I wouldn't have been able to tell my friends, right? But I knew intrinsically for me that if I did this, I didn't work. So I'm now taking shitloads of wickets and coming through. But the problem is I go up against a kid who can spin the ball twice as far as me, right? Now I can land a wrong-in. And my wrong-in, it was more of a combination between Craig Howard's wrong-in and Mushy's wrong-in in that I could pitch it in a similar way to Mushy. A little bit back of a length, and it would come back in. But I got extra top spin on mine, so it didn't get me a lot of wickets. It usually just hit people.
Yeah.
Right? So I'd hit people in the gloves, in the chest, whatever.
So it's probably easier to get a bat pad maybe wicket that way than...
Yeah, right. And that wasn't really, you know, that wasn't why you brought your leg spinner on, really.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you brought your leg spinner on to rip the ball past people and to do... So I was bowling in the wrong way. The Craig Howard that I was talking about before, there's a great story about him hitting Brian McMillan in the sternum. Brian McMillan coming forward to a ball, and it just rips up and hits him. And Brian McMillan, everyone going, what is this going on?
What just happened? Yeah.
Yeah. And mine was a bit like more like that, which is basically a back of the hand slow ball. That's why back of the hand slow ball spin up the same way. Right. That's a slightly different wrong. And so Abdul Qadir would have had that wrong in, and Mushy would have had that wrong in, but they then have the ones that come more out of the side so that it spins to the off a little bit more. And Abdul Qadir probably had about four or five, which is, you know, what Rashid Khan now has, probably seven or eight. Right. But I had one wrong, and it was only years later I worked out that there was multiple versions of that. And so my wrong was great, but never got me any wickets. It would hit everyone, but never got any wickets, especially on synthetic on tracks. And I wasn't ripping the ball past, so I didn't get a lot of wickets caught in slip and caught behind. But I got a lot of bowls in LBWs from the, you know, a bit like Yasir Shah, I suppose, you know, pitching the ball on middle and leg, straightening it. When it didn't spin, I was a chance of getting a boulder in LBW. When it did spin, you know, sometimes it would hit the outside of the stumps and those sorts of things. And then normal leg spin wickets of half trackers and people running down the wicket past you and all that sort of stuff. So I knew it was different. So when you get to representative cricket, everyone else is bowling like Warne. I remember looking, there was about that junior grade cricket that I played in. I think we came up against, there was about 14 leg spinners, and I would say two of them were like me, and the other 12 were basically variations of Shane Warne. So some of them might have been a little bit more like I don't know if you remember Peter McIntyre, who also bowled leg spin for Australia. So he was around as well. He actually bowled with Warne, I think, in a test match once. I think we certainly played test match cricket as well.
I just remember obviously McGill, you know, Stuart McGill bowling
McGill's an interesting one because he comes on later. So at that stage, that's what it was. And it was, it was either that sort of Peter Sleep and Peter McIntyre. Very few people copied those sorts of techniques, unless maybe their dad or their uncle was a leg spinner, right? and then you had a couple of us bowling that sort of more Pakistani version. As I got older, you saw I had a Bangladesh friend, his parents were Bangladeshi. He would bowl more in that style. Another friend who was Indian who would bowl a little bit more in that Anil Kumble style. So it did start to change, but that was a little bit later on. 1996, it's just like you come in and you spin the ball. And like they would pick me because I'd taken all these wickets. And I couldn't get in any representative sides because they'd be like, why are you bowling like this? We want you to bowl like this. And I was like, I can't. And so I went on to higher level cricket. I played, we call it sub-district in Melbourne. It's the weirdest competition ever. It's not quite district or grade cricket, but it's basically like, if you have a look, Endeavour Hills is 11 the other day. I think they're opening the batting with Tilakaratne Dilshan and Karuna Ratne. And who was batting at number three? There's another test player batting at number three as well.
Oh, wow.
And so it's this weird competition where, you know, I think Chris Gayle might have played in it once as well. So there's no one knows how there's money in this competition, but there is. And it's almost a little bit, it's probably what's kept Victorian cricket back because there are more people who play cricket in Victoria than there are in New South Wales. But New South Wales only has one top level competition. You have to go through it.
Uh-huh.
And everyone goes through it in Sydney and their grade cricket is great. Whereas Melbourne's is sort of diluted by having these two competitions that kind of rival each other.
Yeah.
It's almost like a retirement village for the best players who don't want to play Saturday, Sunday, but still want to make money. So I played there. And again, you know, this is the first time when it's also actively my fault, because what they were trying to tell me was true, that there was a biomechanical problem within my action, right? That it didn't matter with Mushtaq Ahmed because he had three or four probably wrongins, right? Mm-hmm. I really only had two and I didn't have a wrongin that was unpickable.
Okay.
So the higher the level I got, more batters are like, you know, I once bowled in front of, you know, I bowled in front of people like, you know, Ed Cowan and Ian O'Brien and, you know, test cricketers who like from 100 meters away, like wrongin, wrongin. You know what I mean? My wrongin's quite easy to pick. I've found ways over the years to make it slightly less easy, but I didn't, when I needed it, I didn't know any of that sort of stuff. And so I'm now a bowler whose main skill is bowling a wrongin, right? Who can be picked. And so what they were trying to do was talk about the biomechanics. And it was actually, it all came together to me one day when I was doing research and I saw Richie Beno show that essentially I was doing more like what Mushy did, which was have my left arm on my left side. Mm-hmm. This is only good if you're you and I on this video. Everyone else is like, what? But my left arm was on my left side. Uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
What you really want to be able to do is have your left arm on your right side as a wrist spinner so that you rotate through your hips better.
So like a sidearm fast bowling action when you're thinking of like how Waqar Yunus is coming through, let's say.
Yeah. And if you go back and you look at Mushy, his is a little bit more on the left side. He's probably almost more in the middle the way he sort of does it. But mine was even more on the left because I had copied him as a kid and hadn't been able to fix that, right? And so my arm was on the left-hand side of my body when it should have been on the right side. And that's probably why I actually had a lot of success when I copied Michael Bevan when I was around 18, 19, 20. It was probably, without knowing, I'd move my arm across a little bit more, which meant I got more revolutions on the ball. And if you remember, Michael Bevan was quite fast because he ran through the crease a little bit.
Yeah.
So I kept that thing that I needed and had the revolutions. So now if you watch me bowl, it's probably more like my own, you know, shitty club cricket version, although I broke my arm, so I might never be able to bowl leg spin again because my wrist doesn't work anymore. But
the
last couple of years I played club cricket, I was, you know, low level cricket, but even when I played against good players, they really struggled with me because suddenly I was bowling at a good pace with my arm in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, to go back to the White Stripes Kings of Leon, no one had ever known anything about leg spin for ages. And I'd read every coaching manual that I could find in my life, right? I knew so much about leg spin, or at least thought I did. And no one else knew anything other than you should bowl slow like Shane Warne.
Yeah.
When these other people would say stuff, I just disregarded it, right? No, Mushy took wickets. It's fine. I'm okay here. And as I got to the higher levels of cricket, I was just too slow. Right.
Mm.
And because I wasn't spinning the ball at that speed, like if I was, there were other guys I played with who bowled my speed and even slower, but they were spinning the ball a long way and I wasn't. Eventually I could get picked off. So a bit going back to like what I was like as a 10-year-old, that's how really good players would play me. They would literally block me for 7 or 8 overs. Right. And then they would go, okay, well, he's not spinning enough to beat the outside part of the bat. And so what we will do now is we'll either just sweep him or we'll just use our feet. And I was too slow to keep them in their crease and I wasn't getting enough revs on the ball to get a top edge when they were sweeping, right? Mm-hmm. And so from that, I basically, you could work me out over a period of time. I would play against really good cricketers. I played against, you know, England women's cricketers. And for the first couple of overs, even they are a little bit like, oh, okay, we've got to keep him out. You know, I bowled against Charlotte Edwards once. And
It took her legend.
It took her about two overs to work me out. But once she worked me out, I had nothing to go to.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of these other things. And so that all comes from Mushy, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the leg spin side of it. The other side with him is that if you're in 1992, the only thing we knew about Pakistani cricketers really is Imran Khan.
Yeah. Right?
So he's huge. So I don't know if you know, but there's a famous brown face comedic skit where it's literally, it's like, and again, you know, this is a Pakistani cricketer in Australia in 1992, 1993. And there was a skit on one of the biggest comedy shows in the country in which all he ever does is talking about how he wants to make love to you like a cornered tiger. That's literally the joke over and over again, right? Oh, and I mean, like brown face and the hair, the open shirts, the whole thing, right? He was that famous.
Those were the days, weren't they? Yes.
Well, I mean, the racism is one thing, but think about how famous he was.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't a cricket thing, right?
Yeah,
is literally like, so he had gone to the point where the top comedic show in the country is imitating a cricketer who only plays in Australia every couple of years.
Yeah.
And he was retired.
He was basically done by then as well. Yeah.
So you've got the racist aspect is phenomenal. But then you've got the fact that that's how big he was. The rest of Pakistan cricket didn't really exist. It really, 92 World Cup obviously helps. I'm not going to lie there. But even then, it's really not until the sort of Wasim Akram in Z days, because Waqar Yunus was never a huge force in Australia in the same way.
No.
He's one of those cricketers that we were always told was going to be really great, and then he came out and he bowled some Yorkers, but I don't think he ever had as many of his greatest moments consistently in Australia.
During World Cups, really. So he's been which doesn't have same sort of aura that maybe Wasim does because of that.
He's always injured or coming back from an injury when he was in Australia. Or he played a lot of cricket when he was past his best
in
Australia as well. Yeah. So that 90s, I think there is a bit more of a movement towards it. But even so, you know, Australian cricket was middle ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as league table. From Warne onwards, Australia takes over.
Right? Yeah.
So the idea that you, as an Australian cricketer, will love Pakistan.
And follow Mushy versus
Mushy's Warne. Even more random. But Pakistan, to begin with, it didn't happen. Crick Info didn't exist. The internet didn't exist in Australia,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
So 1992, here's a fun story about Crick Info and the internet. 1992, there was one computer on the internet in Australia, and it was at Melbourne University, and it was being used by a man who was uploading ball-by-ball content to American university students, and that is the origin, really, to Crick Info.
That's right. And
one computer in the whole country, and it's literally being used to tell people what's going on in 92 World Cup.
I want to ask you about that maybe some other day, because I actually want to do a podcast on the origins of Crick Info and that. And I know you did a thread on one of the people who was sort of like the pioneers of it. And I know some
Sid
of them.
Your guy. So Sid V wrote the feature. I made a film about it, but ESPN wouldn't show it. Because it wasn't exactly what they wanted, but me and Sid V are both, have certainly done that. So it was very hard to follow Pakistani cricket, but as they'd been out those two times in a row, and so I went to a fancy dress party as Inzi. So I had the white brim hat, right? No brown face. Don't worry, we're okay. Not that I think there's any photos of it anyway. But
good.
You know, and people would ask, you know, who, you know, it was because it was, this is the way that questions were phrased at that time. It was like, who's your, you know, oh, you play cricket, Jared. Yeah. What do you do? And leg spinner. And then they get really excited, right?
They're like, oh, Warney.
Oh, your favorite cricket's Warner. Warney. No, it's Mushy.
Actually, one question on Warney and Mushy together in terms of the sort of personalities on the field, not as much off the field. Because, you know, Warne's got that sort of aura, and you've talked about it a lot. A lot of people have, you know, and he's got that sort of distinctive pause, the sort of stare, the sort of charisma. And of course, he's like a sort of rock star with the sort of, especially early days with the sort of beach blonde hair. Mushy's not exactly that, but I remember 92, maybe because that's my first main memory is the 92 World Cup, is, you know, him with Dermot Reeve and doing that sort of thing when he deceives Reeve and he's basically just making fun of him, going like, you can't pick me, can you? So I don't know. I thought he also had a little bit of theater and play to him as well. I don't know what your memory of it, because you were older than me and you followed him maybe even closely, more closely than I did.
Yeah, I think for me, I think I've written about this somewhere before, but there was almost like a magic pixie element to him, right? Like, you know, that pixie. Yeah, he was tiny. He had energy. It was really later on when he plays for Sussex. And it's a shame we never saw the best of Mushy at Test cricket because, you know, I'm now friends with Matt Prior. And Matt Prior is sick and tired of me asking questions about Mushy, right? And so apparently, I think Mushy signed up with Sussex. Matt Prior had just became the wicketkeeper. And Mushy said, who is my keeper? Who is my keeper? Right. And just took him to the nets and just bowled and bowled and bowled and said, this is what this is and whatever. And they did that for years until Matt Prior could understand, you know, what the hell was going on in front of him. Right. And you look at his numbers, you know, taking 100 wickets in county cricket, you know,
phenomenal for them. Yeah.
And, you know, that I think that was probably his peak. That version of Mushy is probably more like Abdul Qadir or Warne, right? When you're completely on top of your game and you know you're completely on top of your game. That other version that I think we got through the 90s was probably more cheeky chappy.
Right? Yeah.
Like of just like, oh, you can't, you're not going to be able to pick this. And, oh, this is so fun. And I think that is more traditionally, I think that is something that drew me to him again. Uh-huh. Right? He didn't have the big swagger or the big leg spinner, right? He had that, but I got something. You don't even know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it right now, right? And I'm going to have so much fun doing it. Right?
Cheeky fucker, basically. He's a cheeky fucker.
And if you go back, we really hadn't had many spinners like that. Abdul is, like I said, maybe early Abdul was like this. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we get the lots of clips about him, we're talking late 70s, early 80s, he's like in charge, right? And you could see. He's like, there's that great story about him playing grade cricket in Melbourne and he bowls for an hour. He bowls a wrong-in, right? And the batter picks it and blocks it and goes, great, that's his wrong-in. And the next hour, Abdul doesn't bowl another wrong-in. And this guy's like, why is he not bowling a wrong-in? Why is he not bowling a wrong-in? Why is he not bowling a wrong-in? And then, bang, he bowls the secret, the finger wrong-in, which is the one that he passed on to Kumble and to Imran Tahir and Afridi and everyone else. You realize, I mean, the mental fortitude to sit there for an hour. There's no way Mushy, that era of Mushy that I fell for, was waiting an hour to bowl a wrongin, right?
Yeah.
He's like, leggy, wrongin, top spinner, slider, leggy, wrongin, right? And he was also, you know, you look at Abdul was trying to work you out spiritually, and Shane Warne was trying to break you mentally, right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, if you look at Mushy, he's not like that at all. It really more is, I'm going to bowl leggy, then I'm going to bowl wrong. Oh, you can't play it. You can't play it. Okay, we both know you can't play it now. I'm going to
this is
you
funny.
You can't come back and do it again.
Yeah.
Right? and so I do think it was he had a different dynamic that I suppose to a 12-year-old kid was a little bit more exciting. Do you know what I mean? Like, it did feel like he was kind of one of us. Like, you know,
he's just having fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, having studied sport, you know, very closely over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, whatever it's been now, it's that energy is one of the things that people really like young players. Kind of like young players who don't know what they're doing is wrong, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think he just had it in abundance, right? And it was just coursing through his veins. You couldn't not notice what he was doing. And I think that was a big part of it as a younger person, you know. And it's a shame for me, I never got to watch sort of the older on top of it, Mushy, because I think by that stage I was ready for that. I would have grown perfectly into that era. And as I think you might have, I've said this before, I might have done it in a video, but I preferred late career Shane Warne to early career Shane Warne, because late career Shane Warne wasn't the physical specimen anymore.
Exactly.
Literally what Abdul Qadir had been in stories. Right. Uh-huh. Just like, well, I'm going to set you up now for about 40 minutes and I'm going to do this. I can't spin the ball sideways every ball like I used to. Right. But it doesn't matter because I'm actually smarter and I know more about you as a human being and as a batter than I need to. And I understand exactly what I need to do here. So for me, second career Shane Warne was much more interesting. And that was the era that I would have loved to have watched Mushy. But unfortunately, it was playing for Sussex. And I think he'd already finished for Pakistan. Did he come back a couple of times? But, you know.
We also had Sakhalin then. So it also
he wasn't even always in the side.
But you're right. Heard an interview, or I read an interview with Mushy. And it's funny because I didn't know this, but preparing for this interview, I was actually reading it. And he actually says something which matches what you're describing, because he basically says that a lot of his sort of
Drift, he said, I actually didn't understand how to use Drift until later in my career. I didn't learn how to use all the variations until later in my career. And which by that point, he was actually much more a county player than he was a Pakistan player.
I think it's, that's why leg spinners generally get better in age. It's because you have the basic skill. So, you know, to bowl a leg spinner and to land it on a spot with any revolutions on it is tricky, right? And so that you spend a lot of your time probably dealing with that side of things, right? So look at someone like Bryce McGain and Bob Holland. And, you know, there's been some other ones in other countries as well where it took forever for them to perfect it. And then they do, and they end up in test level, you know, in their 30s. Them matching it with, that's what makes Rashid Khan so special, right? Is the ability that at a very early age, he didn't just perfect what other people had done. He had the physical advantages, so he can bowl quicker. He has that weird action that allows him to, you know, land the ball where he wants to, in a way at speed that most leg spinners can't do.
Yeah.
But he also worked out that cross seam worked. He then worked out that he could bowl this kind of wrong-in and then this kind of wrong-in and this kind of wrong-in. And he just, if I'd have told you in 1996 that Abdul Qadir had more than two wrong-ins, anyone in cricket would have looked at me weirdly, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But the truth is that, and this is definitely only going to work on, this is definitely only going to work on the video for you.
But so he's got a ball in his hand right now.
I have a ball in my hand. When you bowl a leg spinner with like a sort of standard leg spinner's grip, okay, the ball then has to come out over your fingers, over your two, your ring finger and your middle finger, right? What people like Abdul Qadir started finding. So Abdul Qadir is the first one that sort of started changing it. And what he did was he started holding the ball in his fingers tips, right? So it looks like he's still holding it normally, but when it comes out, it doesn't have to roll over the fingers. And wrong-ins are slower than leg spinners. And the reason wrong-ins are slower than leg spinners is because it has to travel over those fingers, right?
Okay.
So he bowls what is called a finger wrong-in. You can see Afridi bowls it occasionally. Anil Kumble bowled a beautiful finger wrong-in, I think he then had a top spinning wrong-in, and he then had a side spinning wrong-in, and he probably then had one that looked more like a leg spinner and wasn't, right? Those are my guesses. Unfortunately, his best stuff is quite often done in Urdu, and I've never had the chance to just sit him in a corner and go through it all. But that's my guess of the four, five wrong-ins he had. Rashid Khan starts to experiment with grips, right? And Imran Tahir was another one where they start to hold it so that the ball's almost already out of your hand when you bowl it, right? And so you're almost holding it with your little finger at this point. So it's still coming out the side, which means it's still getting the rotations into the batter or away if you're a left-hander. But it's not getting slowed down by the fingers again. The problem with the finger wrong-in is that you can't get the wrist action on it as much, right?
Okay.
But both of those things basically do the same thing, which is they go down the other end at a speed where the batter can't pick it. So Sandeep, when I worked with St. Lucia, you know, I went to David Warner and I said, you know, we're playing Sandeep Lamachani. No one can place him. What do we need to do? And Warner's like, oh, it's easy. He's wrong and slower.
So as soon as you see the sort of slow, the pace,
and you haven't picked it, you have to start to play for a wrong-in. And in Warner's case, what he was saying is if you're wrong and you're a right-hander, it just beats the outside edge. And that's the worst thing that happens, right? But if you start to play for them, you can actually then start to hit them because now you're just facing a slower off-spinner, right? And look, this is a constant thing. You see this with a lot of bowlers, and it's really been something in the last 5 or 6 years that has changed. But you don't see a lot of younger leg spinners until the YouTube age, which is why Rashid Khan is quite so interesting. Until the YouTube age, that took years to work out, right? Absolutely years. Look at Shane Warne's slider. It takes him about, this is when we need Dan Bredig on the podcast, but I reckon it takes him about 9 years to perfect the slider.
Wow.
Right? He talks about it early on, right? But to actually get to the point where it looks like a leg spinner, it still has rotations like a leg spinner, but it skids straight on, that took him a long time. Afridi probably takes 6 or 7 years, but he's running through a little bit quicker, so it's a little bit easier for him. Those sorts of things, we missed that with Mushy. We missed that elevation. And when, you know, talk to Matt Pryor or some of the other Sussex players or the guys who played against them in county cricket, they're like, yeah, that's what we faced. You know, the just you know, scrambling the seam. Because leg spinners, you go back and watch Warren, he bowls with a straight seam every ball,
mm-hmm.
right? We didn't even know that. It didn't make any sense, because if you look at all the old coaching manuals, they're like, make sure your seam is dead straight, because then you will hit the seam every time, which means you'll get more bounce and more spin and more purchase. Well, that's not what we want. We want to put as many rotations on the ball so that one gets spin and bounce and purchase, and then the next one goes dead straight, right? And once we get to that level, that is unlocked. All those things, older leg spinners were working some of those things out, but it does take a long time. So I feel that we missed Mushy at the international level, and he must have been at that level just to dominate in the way that he did in counter cricket. It would be impossible to have, you know, as good a bowler as he was, he went to another level, I think, late in his career.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at then the matching of what you can still do physically. And we're seeing it with Ashwin at the moment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ashwin in the last 3 years is the kind of the perfect thing of, eventually his fingers, his wrist, his elbow, his shoulder, something's going to give, mm-hmm. right? And he'll still be a good bowler because of the mind.
Mind, but yeah.
We just had that perfect period over the last 2 or 3 years, especially in Test cricket, where it's like he's completely on top of what finger spin bowling is at the moment, and his body is letting him do it.
Yeah. Right?
Eventually he won't do that. And then we hope he has a worn period, right? Where he can go on with a depleted body, but not everyone can. And we don't think about spinners as physical athletes in that way, but mm-hmm. you talk to Graham Swan and Graham Swan will say to you, my elbow hurt.
Yeah.
I couldn't continue to keep doing what I'd done. And my elbow had always hurt, but playing that much test cricket over a couple of years, it just wore it out. And I was from the moment he started playing test cricket, he was on borrowed time from that perspective. And we just don't think about spinners that way. And it means that sometimes they have to come up with those other methods. And as I said, the only thing that's different now is that, you know, Varun Chakravarti and, Rashid Khan and Tik Shana and all these guys, Ajanta Mendes was one of the first. They're just working it out through YouTube and through experimentation in a way that no one ever has before, which means at a young age, they can put some of those skills on.
This is the end of part one. Please check out part two of my interview with Jared Kimber, in which we talk about Shadab Khan, whether he should play test matches for Pakistan or not. We also talk about Matthew Hayden as Pakistan's mentor during the T20 World Cup and coaching more generally. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Before I finish, I just want to say thank you to Dikobe for letting me use his music. You can donate to my Patreon page if you would like to help me in continuing to do these podcasts. Links with information about the guests, the music, and the Patreon page can be found in the podcast description. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.